A very good day to you. I'm Howard Feldman. This is the Sunday Synthesis Podcast with me, Howard Feldman, and of course, Dr. Anton Myberg. It is the 10th of October. Things, I hope, are looking good, even though I'm getting a little bit nervous from what I'm seeing out there. But we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Judging by the number of questions, in other words, lesser questions, everybody seems very relaxed. Dr. Myberg, good morning. Is COVID done and dusted? Can we throw away our face masks and run naked-faced through the streets of Johannesburg?
Listen, I've just got an image of you running naked. Okay, can we not actually go that direction, please? First of all, first, let's see you running first before we get out of
it's going to be that kind of a
we can take it that way. Right. definitely. Got to clear the mind. Okay, so good morning. The COVID numbers are definitely down dramatically. There's no doubt about that. Worldwide, there's been a shift in a downward trend over the last 6 weeks. So globally, we're seeing a marked decrease. In the country, we've seen a major decrease. There are currently 238,376,000 cases worldwide with 4.8 million deaths and 215 million cases resolved. United States has 45.1 million cases with 773,000 deaths. India, 39.9 million cases with 450 million deaths. And 450,000 deaths. In Brazil, interestingly enough, is 600,000 deaths. South Africa, 2,911,497 cases with 88,292 deaths and 816 new cases in the last 24 hours, a 2.8% test positivity rate. Currently in Gauteng, there are 1,872 cases with 336 in ICU and 171 of those ventilated. My hospital, thank God, still for the last, now going into the fourth week, has no COVID patients. And we are currently sitting on 19 million people in this country having been vaccinated, of which 9.8 million are fully vaccinated, about 21%.
Okay, so things really are looking better. What does that mean in terms of our behavior?
So, I mean, that's a twofold question because is it our behavior or the behavior of other people? In other words, should we be behaving differently or is it okay that other people are behaving in a different way? And we definitely can change our behavior. Now's the time to actually sort of, as I say, make hay while the sun shines, but you still got to make sure that you're not going to be a catalyst for the next wave. We know that the fourth wave is going to come. We don't want to make it come quicker. We need more people vaccinated. So we can drop certain things. And by dropping certain things, doesn't mean you can stop wearing masks, doesn't mean you can stop social distancing. But when you're outside, you can gather outside with people. You can still wear your masks. You can have bigger gatherings. As long as you do it in a safer, much more controlled environment, then it's easier to do these type of things.
I keep asking this about wearing masks outdoors. If I go for a walk, obviously, I'm not going to wear a mask if there's no one else in the street. It just seems pointless. Is it okay just to go for a walk and then when you see somebody walking towards you, put your mask up?
It's actually quite a silly question, and I'll tell you why. Because the government mandate is every single person outside of the house has to wear a mask. So it's not a question we can even sort of debate at this point in time until the government changes their stance or changes the law. But you've got to change, you're saying the law of the government is that you've got to wear a mask. I didn't say you don't have to wear a mask when you're outside. I said you still got to wear a mask when you're outside when you're gathering with people, but you can have gatherings. It's a very different thing.
You still have to
wear a mask according to the government laws.
If you go running, according to government, you do not need to wear a mask. Right.
So according to government, you don't have to wear a mask. But if you're running with people, you should be wearing a mask. Once you bring people into the actual equation.
Okay, so let's go to my question.
Unless you're running far apart.
Right. So if you go back to my question, which you determined silly, which actually wasn't, is if I'm going for a walk or if I'm going for a run or whatever it would be, and I'm on my own, but then I see people coming towards me, then all I need to do is put up my mask. But if I'm by myself and if I'm walking in the streets for exercise or whatever it would be, then I'm okay to do that. Is that right?
Yeah, but it's a stupid question from not from your point of view, it's from the government point of view, because they say you shouldn't be wearing you shouldn't be outside without a mask, but yet you can run without a mask. So it doesn't make any sense. And that's what the whole thing of this mandate from the government has been the whole way through, that we just don't understand what they actually even say.
In other words, there's an element of irrationality. Look, I think as long as, I don't even mind that, as long as I don't touch those beaches in December, because then I'll be really angry. The one thing that I wanted to ask you as well is, in terms of kids having parties, we're starting to see a lot of these younger ages, as well as older teenagers in particular, wanting to get together, are getting together. What are your thoughts on this?
Now, as I said previously, make hay while the sun shines. Do it outside. Make sure that you've got social distancing. Make sure the kids are wearing masks. We want our kids to start actually being kids again and start actually having lives again. The problem comes is when there's no one to look after these kids or these younger adults or these teens, and you actually, there's no responsibility to say that, you know, are they wearing their masks? Are they drinking alcohol? Are they smoking together? Are they sharing hubby bubbies? Are they doing all these things? Because once that happens, once you start with the smoking and the drinking, then you drop the guard, you know, because then you cannot make sure that people are going to be carrying on wearing their masks. So I'm all for kids' parties done with social sort of interaction, as well as the kids are wearing masks, as well as the social distancing is kept properly. And most importantly, do it outside. Then you've got less chance of spreading and you've got more chance of safety.
In terms of this fourth wave that we have looming over our heads, does it have to be, does it have to be a wave, or is it possible to see an increase in cases to a certain amount and then it dissipates because people are more vaccinated?
So I think we've got to clarify what is the actual term wave. What does it mean when you say wave? We're going into the fourth wave. It basically means if you look at the seven-day moving average of the new cases over a seven-day period, that exceeds 30% of the peak of the previous wave. So what that actually means is, let's say the peak of the previous wave was 10,000 cases a day for 7 days. In other words, if you hit above 3,000 cases a day, then you've gone into the fourth wave. So right now, our numbers are very low, and we're very happy with that. If those numbers start increasing dramatically and get above the 30%, then we will look into the fourth wave.
Right.
Are we going to get a fourth wave? There's no doubt we're going to get a fourth wave. The question we've got to ask is, will it be as dramatic as the third wave or the second wave? And we're not quite sure. That all depends on the vaccinated people. You know, if more people get vaccinated, there's less chance of people landing up in the hospitals. And the issues with the waves are not the actual infections, it's the amount of people that actually land up in hospital, which put a strain on the healthcare, which put a strain on the actual institutions. And that's what we got to worry about. And what we're seeing overseas is, yes, there's plenty of people getting infections, but it's the problem is that the unvaccinated people are the ones landing up in hospital. Those are the people that are getting sick, those are the people that are getting critically ill. In fact, what should be done down the line is we're looking every single day at the numbers of people who are COVID positive or SARS-CoV-2 positive. But we should be getting to a stage now where we're saying, let's rather look at the number of people who are in hospital, especially with the numbers of vaccination going up. It makes far more sense to me that way. But we've still got to ramp up our vaccinations, and that will help prevent a broader wave in the fourth sort of wave, which we're hoping will be a lot less harsh on the country.
I know you haven't seen many cases in hospital the last few weeks, which is absolutely brilliant. But in terms of the numbers, people dying having been fully vaccinated, how are those numbers looking? Because obviously now we should be getting more stats from both South Africa and around the world.
Look, there's no doubt, and I've said this before, that no vaccine is foolproof. You still can die if you have been vaccinated, but there's a higher chance of you getting struck by lightning than dying from your vaccination. In other words,
that's from the vaccination itself.
There's extremely high benefit to getting vaccinated to prevent infection, and it's more so to prevent actual severe and critical cases. We know you can still get infected. It's the same as I always say as influenza. When you get flu and you have a flu vaccine, you can still get flu, but it's very mild. A lot of the time it's asymptomatic, and a lot of the time it goes under the radar. So the numbers of breakthrough infections especially in healthcare workers, have been noted has been very low. I mean, if you look at a cohort of study done across the hospitals, it's been a very small percentage of people who've had breakthrough infections, and even smaller percentage of people who have actually landed up in hospital having been fully vaccinated.
Right, right. So those the numbers are absolutely continuing to support the fact that vaccinations are safe and that they prevent serious illness and death.
100%.
Okay.
Not that I present it 100%, but they do.
Right, no, I got it. You 100% agree. I'm finding you a little jarring today. Is everything all right at that hospital?
No, it's that pink breast awareness shirt that you're wearing today.
All right, says the guy who's showing us his cleavage. So let's just talk also about the fact that, and I would imagine this is a concern for it's a concern for you as a healthcare worker. We are moving, I think, from everything that you've said, into dangerous territory now in terms of protection for healthcare workers, because it's about 8 months now since the Johnson & Johnson trials, the Sasonke trial started. We still, despite week after week being told that, yes, it's coming soon, that we'll get the booster shots for healthcare workers, it hasn't happened yet. What needs to happen? Healthcare workers start getting ill, and then we'll do something about it. What is going on?
Please God, not. Yeah, I think you're raising a very valid point and a very scary point, especially for healthcare workers, people who are working on the front line. Once again, I'm talking about people who are working in hospitals when these patients get admitted and on the front line, as well as your auxiliary staff, your physiotherapists, your GPs who are also seeing the patients on the front line. These are the people that need to be protected so we can actually carry on looking after the patients. And a study came out recently about the Pfizer vaccine that shows that people who have had protection after the second injection or the second vaccine, after you've had that, your levels wane of your antibodies within a few months. But up to 6 months, you're still protected against severe disease or critical disease up to about 90% for at least 6 months. So that means after you've had your first dose of your Pfizer, you get about 35 to 40% protection within 3 weeks. After you've had your second dose, about within 4 weeks, you get about 77 to 80% protection against mild to moderate infection. And you get about 95% to 96% protection against severe critical disease. But with that waning and those antibodies, and those neutralizing antibodies actually decreasing, we're now all going to be in a stage where we need to be boosted. And that has been shown across the world now in Israel. The CDC are bringing that up as well to say that, you know, people who are immune suppressed, in other words, people who are on chemotherapy or people who are on chronic corticosteroids or people who have had stem cell transplants, people on dialysis, these people have got weakened immune systems. So therefore, after their second Pfizer, they need to have a boost. And we can corroborate that with the Johnson & Johnson. We've noted, and from the studies show, that you need to get a booster after the Johnson & Johnson. So whether or not it's going to be a Pfizer or whether that's going to be a Johnson & Johnson, if you were vaccinated 8 months ago, now is the time to get your booster. Why hasn't it happened? Well, because the government are sitting on the backsides as usual. We need it to be done. There's no lack of vaccines in this country. We have got enough vaccine. We've actually got a surplus of vaccines. I mean, you can go past so many of these vaccine sort of places where they're actually giving the vaccine, and you can see that there's hardly any queues at the moment. So they've got a surplus of vaccines. They're wasting vaccines on a daily basis because they draw them up in the mornings. Why is that not being given to your healthcare workers? Why is it not given to your auxiliary workers, the people who are desperate to get them so they can continue protecting you?
And what about under 18s? It's the same thing there. Surely if there are vaccines available and they say, right, at, you know, 1 hour before the vaccination sites close in the afternoon, it's open to under 18-year-olds. Let's get people vaccinated. I don't really understand what the problem is.
I cannot agree with you more. There's no reason to wait. I know I heard like rumors, as I said, that they're going to try and vaccinate the 16 to 18-year-olds in the next sort of vaccination sort of draft. And then only a later stage, the 12 to 16-year-olds. But what's the point? What is the point of waiting if you don't have people? I know we're trying to do the VUMA, we're trying to push people to get vaccinated and the government to do that more effectively. But in the interim, while we're sitting there, no one's getting the vaccinations, push for the people who want to be vaccinated.
Absolutely right. Is there an ideal time in terms of the fires? A lot of people in South Africa have had their fires. They've had two fires. Are we seeing what the optimal time is to get the third dose from when you've had your last dose?
So if we look at the studies done in Israel, it looks about 6 months after you've had your second dose, unless you have got a weakened immune system, as I said, or you've got severe immune suppression with having had chemo, dialysis, severe corticosteroid use. Then the CDC have come out to say that people in that category, people over the age of 65 with comorbidities, can get vaccinated within 28 days after their second Pfizer vaccine.
Right.
But the majority of people will need to wait 6 months.
They'll need to.
I don't know how long we're going to wait. I mean, if you look at the studies in Israel, the majority of people have already waited more than 6 months,
right,
because that's recommended for when the antibodies wane, as we said earlier, and your effectivity of the actual vaccination decreases. So with regards to people with a decreased immunity, and the reason why we say 28 days is because they have a decreased response to the vaccine. They don't make a great or as robust antibody response. And that's why they're saying within 28 days of the second vaccine, you should get your booster.
Right. Is there a time where the vaccine, if you leave it that long, that it almost becomes ineffectual? In other words, when you eventually have your third Pfizer, it's almost like you have your first. Or is that just my lack of understanding?
We don't think so, because we still go back to all the fact that you still have an innate and adaptive immune response. And you still do have B cells and T cells and T cell memory. And I mean, if you look at people who've had the rubella and the measles and the mumps vaccines, that immunity lasts for years and years and years, albeit that it might sort of peter down a bit of 1 or 2% per year, and you don't have to have boosters regularly with that. Mm. It's a very different mechanism, but there still is going to be some inherent protection and some long-term protection from the vaccinations.
Okay, let's just talk. Last week, you started telling us about a new drug that is hopefully going to be used for the treatment of COVID-19. Is there more information available on this drug?
So we said the name of that drug is molnupiravir, which is an antiviral agent made by Merck. And they are calling it a potential game changer in the fight against COVID, because it decreases the risk of hospitalization and severe infection by up to 50%. The way it works, it is actually inhibits the replication of the SARS-CoV-2 by a mechanism known as lethal mutagenesis. Okay, and that in English basically means it causes the machinery that's responsible to produce the virus genetic material to make mistakes. And therefore, it renders those copies defective, which is a very important thing. So it works very differently to your vaccinations. It's not an alternative to vaccination. It's for people who have already been infected. It's highly beneficial in the ways that first it's going to be far cheaper, and it's not intravenous like your other drugs like remdesivir and your monoclonal antibodies, and can even be administered from home.
Okay, so that is really a game changer. But of course, we have no idea when that will be available.
100%. So we've got to really wait for that, and we've got to wait for Merck to actually start increasing the number of production that they're going to be doing with this drug. And once again, you know, in some ways we do benefit by being in South Africa, because the European countries and the American states, they'll all get this drug long before us. So we will see what the experience is with it before we get it.
Right. How do we know when, is there a measurable way to determine when a pandemic, something like COVID-19, becomes endemic? In other words, it just becomes like a flu, because people still do land up in hospital every year with flu, and people still die from flu every year. So how do we know when we've reached that sort of situation? Is there a measurable way?
Look, you've got to look at the intervals between the waves. And if you look at the interval between the first wave to the second wave to the third wave to the fourth wave, that will tell you what you're dealing with. But as you said, you know, in order to call it a wave, you've got to be at 30% of your peak of your previous wave. So if you don't reach that, then you're no longer having waves. And you don't generally get these huge waves without being in a pandemic. And And yes, it can be endemic, and yes, it will be endemic. And we do believe that with the vaccination numbers going up, it will become endemic by next year, hopefully. We're praying, we're begging, we're pleading for that to happen. But that's all according to people actually getting vaccinated.
Yesterday, I was asked to participate in on a panel to discuss whether vaccinated people should, people who choose not to be vaccinated should be allowed into places of worship. And it was quite an interesting discussion. What are your thoughts on that? If somebody chooses not to get the vaccine, what limitations do you think should be or can be placed on those people?
So from this, we're talking from a non-medical point of view. We're talking more from a social point of view. And from a social point of view, there's reasons why the rest of the world is giving out this vaccine passport, as well as South Africa is doing it now. For the sole purpose is that everyone believes that you need to be vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, you're at a higher risk of spreading the virus to other people. And therefore, my belief is that if you're going to religious gatherings, if you're going to gatherings and you have chosen not to be vaccinated, then you shouldn't be allowed to go to those gatherings, because you are taking the safety away from people. You're taking people's sort of right to be in areas where they're unprotected away from them because of your needs, your selfish needs, should I say. So I'm a firm believer in this vaccine passport. I think it's very important. I do believe that when you go to social gatherings, you should have proof that you have been vaccinated. It's the way going forward. No doubt about it.
But just to be clear, if I'm fully vaccinated and somebody who is unvaccinated comes into an environment, am I at greater risk even though I have been vaccinated? Because that's the question.
We have discussed this before for a reason to say that, you know, someone who's unvaccinated can still transfer the virus to you. Mm-hmm. Now, because you've been vaccinated, we know that there's a lesser chance of you getting severe critical disease from it or landing up in hospital, but you can still get mild to moderate disease. And in someone who's immune suppressed or someone who doesn't even know they're immune suppressed, who've been vaccinated and think that they're safe, they can transfer the virus to them and they can make them sick.
So it's particularly people who are vulnerable that we are talking about. So in fact, it becomes even more...
But not even vulnerable people. It's people who aren't... people who actually then get infected or aren't vulnerable, who go home and spread it to their parents or to their grandparents.
Right.
So it's the whole cycle.
Right. It's not a medical question, but do you see this becoming now the accepted norm for social gatherings, religious gatherings, even work environments?
I do. I think it's a game changer, because it changes the whole way people can actually start interacting. I mean, I think soon, within the next hopefully 3 or 4 months, we'll be able to go to outdoor gatherings without masks. I think it's definitely on the cards, you know, and like Israel do, where they actually have outdoor gatherings, no masks, they go indoors with masks. That's the next progression of the whole sort of continuum of this virus and this whole pandemic.
How far do you think we are from that? And I'm not talking legally.
I'm saying we always look at the other countries to follow their lead. And if you look at, you know, the like Israel, we're always about 4 to 6 months behind them. So I'd say we're about 4 to 6 months behind them regarding that. And we've also just, you know, as I say, and I'm going to say it again and again, it all depends on how many more people we can get vaccinated in this country.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome. That is where we leave it. Is there good news?
So there's great news. The sun's out. The numbers are down worldwide. The numbers are down in the country. Travel is open to the UK. So now we can at least go and visit Anfield. I mean, what a blessing is that, you know?
If you're fully vaccinated.
If you're fully vaccinated with your vaccine passport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the quote, "The pain you feel today is the strength that you feel tomorrow. Be safe, look after yourself, and carry on doing the right thing."
Absolutely right. That is where we leave it. Dr. Anton Marburg, thank you as always. Please don't forget to subscribe below to our YouTube channel, and you'll get updates as and when they become available. In the meantime, you have a fantastic week. Keep sending us your questions, and we'll see you next week, Sunday. Be safe and God bless. I'm Howard Feldman for the Sunday Synthesis Podcast.